All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much for being here, something you probably hear in every session. And welcome in this session about business continuity with System Center. My name is Mike Ressler. I work as a Microsoft evangelist for Veeam. And I have brought with me one of the Swedish Mafia guys, Robert Hedblom, working for Lumagate, who is an MVP in cloud and data center management. And what we're going to do today we're going to talk about business continuity. And we know it's a difficult subject. We have talked to many companies in our past, working as a consultant, where every company wants to have disaster recovery, every company wants to have business continuity, not a single company wants to pay a lot of money for it. Why? Because they feel it's something that's there, but they never use, until, of course, something happens, and then it's too late. And what we're going to try to do is talk a bit about what business continuity is, why you need it, although I think many of you know it, otherwise you probably won't be here in this room anyway. So we're going to keep this very short. We're going to talk about different methods you can use about business continuity. And my colleague over here, Robert, is going to talk about a few of these layers you can use in that plan, but they're all very expensive. And what we wanted to show you today is that there are two layers you can use, backup to the cloud and using replicas, that are pretty cheap, and that you can use within your infrastructure to build a decent kind of business continuity plan, or even use it within disaster recovery. All right. So let's start with the definition of business continuity. And I'm not going to read it to you. This is from Wikipedia. I didn't invent that myself, luckily. But there are a few things that are important. One of them is that it's not implemented at the time of a disaster. Now, this sounds normal for most of us, but we actually, when I was a consultant before at other companies, I got called in a lot into companies that saying, something went wrong, can you fix it? Well, do you have a decent backup? Do you have this? Do you have this? Do you have this? No. Well, guess what? I'm going to call my boss now and ask if I can leave, but there's no way I'll be able to do a good job. It's just not possible. You need to think about this up front. And again, we're going to try to show you and prove to you that you can do this cheap. And the second thing that you need to remember about this definition, that it is a activity. And this is also something that many companies forget. From the moment you have this plan, from the moment you have implemented, it's not doing what it does and you don't have to look at it anymore. It's really something that you need to maintain. If you have new virtual machines, you need to make sure that they are part of that plan. If you make changes, and there are big changes, you need to make sure they're part of the plan. So there's a lot of work and a lot of effort in this, and you need to remember that. Again, most of us know it, but we also know the stress that everybody is putting onto IT professionals, meaning doing more with less money, less people, less time. So let's have a look how we can solve these challenges. All right. Now, why? Well, there could be many reasons. It could be because you have service level agreements with your customers or your end users even, and it's not probably not an SLA, but an SLO or something. It could be because it's part of your disaster recovery plan. It could be because you're one of those guys that has to live with IPA or SOX or Basel regulations. That could be part of it. Or it could be that you're a very good IT professional and you just want this to support your business in case something goes wrong, your end user keeps working. So there could be many reasons why you need this. But what we see is that the biggest challenge is cost. It's always the same. I've talked to many companies, proposed them great plans, and they said, wow, this is what we need. But what is going to cost me? And then you put some figures to them, and they're like, yeah, it was nice talking to you. There's the door. We'll pay you for that one day you were here, but you know what? Are you kidding me? And it's been an excuse for me for the last 13, 14 years. That's the amount of time I'm working with backup, disaster recovery, business continuity, and it's always been an excuse in many companies. And there are many layers in that cost. It's not only paying the software, paying the hardware, but it's also paying the time of your people, paying some, you know, very expensive consultants like myself doing this kind of thing. Well, I used to be a consultant. Never mind. Or it's also about the cost of training your people. I already said it. Today, many organizations need to do more with less money. Now, if that means that a lot of your IT guys need to know more about different infrastructures. You can be an expert in SQL and in Exchange. You need to know about clusters. If you're really in a small team, you have to learn virtualization as well. And suddenly you have to learn more. That's difficult. Again, we're going to try to show you that with things you know, with System Center, with Hyper-V, that you can build two great layers within that plan and to make sure that you have some kind of business continuity plan. Very important here is that you have to think about RTO, RPO. How fast do you want to recover? If your boss comes to you and says, you know what, if something goes wrong, my end users have to be able to work within 30 seconds and there can be no data loss, then probably what we're going to show you isn't going to be enough. Then you're going to add additional layers to that plan. But if they say, you know what, if really something goes on and you can be back online in 2 hours with, let's say, 10 minutes of data loss, I'm fine with it, then this is really what you're going to have to look at and implement into your infrastructure. And with that, here you go.
Thanks, Mike. And thank you for the introduction. Hello, everyone. So let's look at those different layers, okay? As we know, the business continuity plan depends on different layers, okay, as Mike said. Different layers are actually different technologies like cluster, geo-clustering, center replication, snapshot, backup, and so on and so forth. What we would like to show is how we can use backup to the cloud and Hyper-V. So let's start up with the backup to the cloud. Many of you guys may have seen this before. How many of you guys, please raise your hands, are using DPM today? Wow, the numbers are growing. Cool. So on the left side, just going to do a short presentation of it. DPM is the key function in that layer when we use backup to the cloud or Azure. On the left-hand side, you got our workloads, Exchange, SQL, SharePoint, Dynamics, Hyper-V, Windows Server, Active Directory, and clients. For those workloads that are using transactional logs like Exchange, SQL, but also file servers, we can synchronize every 15 minutes to the DPM server. Okay, so the DPM server is the first layer in the business continuity plan. You use local attached storage, like a SAN, NAS, or DAS, where you store your replicas and recovery points on your DPM server, okay? You can also use tape. Then you have additional layers, okay? Also, you can use that DPM, DPM, DR scenario. We use a primary and secondary DPM server. One other important note, DPM will track those block level changes in your production environment and synchronize them to the primary and secondary DPM server. But we do have a fourth layer now, and that's Azure and backup to the cloud. So what I would like to do now is to demonstrate how you do a setup.
Okay, just for your information, what he's going to show you is possible today. It came out about, I think, 5 hours ago.
No, actually, 1 hour and 30 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. So really? It's now public. Yeah.
Yeah, just saying.
So there are three things you need to be aware of or think of when you will configure your DPM server for backup to the cloud or Azure. The first one is you must manage your subscription. You must have an account. That's a good thing. It's a good thing to start with, isn't it? Yeah. You're just sitting here in front, nodding, smiling. Yeah. Good. Because the prerequisite here is Windows Server 2012. You need PowerShell. And you also need a Windows Identity Foundation in place. So what you need to do is download the Windows Azure Backup Online Agent, the longest word ever, and install it on your DPM server. When you got that in place, you need to register a DPM server. You can buy a certificate or you can make your own certificate. You do that under register, okay? Later on, you need to register or configure it. So what you need to do is when you hit configure, you got some good options here, okay? Let's say you're behind a proxy. We can do that. We can manage that online protection, even if you're behind a proxy. You can do throttling. I will cover this in the next slides, but keep that in mind, throttling. Recovery folder. I will also cover this in the demo for recover from Azure, okay? So just keep in mind that there's something called recovery folder settings, okay? Encryption. Well, with this comes a specific passphrase. And just so you guys know what it looked like, here it is. Here's our password for this demo. I know you want to say something.
Yeah, now that you show them our passphrase and it's on the video, now they can actually go to the cloud and take our data out of it.
Yeah, of course. And it's your password with your credit account number, so.
Yeah. Thank
yep.
you. I'm going
to
close this one.
I want to share it. So,
yeah. I'm going to close this one.
Don't you trust
session.
Those guys?
Yeah. Sorry.
So that's about the configuration. So when you got that configured and you got Azure Agent online working on the DPM server, the next thing you do is under protection. So you got your defined protection groups. They're all backup scheduled, actually. And here, for this example, we got three protection groups. All goes to Azure. Main important thing is you must have a local disk pool on the DPM server, even if you're going to put it in the cloud, because we're using the replicas and copy those up into the cloud. So I'm just going to show you how to configure it. The first one, if you want to use online protection, here's the place to check the checkbox, okay? Do that, and you will define all your online protection. You can have times. I will show it. So let's say, for those who doesn't have a primary or secondary DPM server, this is a great scenario. Let's put that DPM database up into Azure. And we check the checkbox, we want to use online backup. We set the recovery, the retention time. We set the schedule for when we want to do the express full backup, okay? So let's say we do it on Mondays at 8 p.m. We can collocate SQL, Hyper-V, and clients in the disk pool. Choose a replica method. We want to do it now. Consistency check. And we want to put it in Azure. A simple checkbox. Check it. We're going to Azure. So bear in mind, my friends, you can do two recovery points up to Azure each and every day. Just keep that in mind. There's a summary, and then you create your group. Great. So that's how you configure and make DPM start working with that Azure backup. So, when we are out talking and listening to customers, there are some discussions and questions coming up. One of those are, or is, I want to have control. What I put in Azure, and most specifically, where it's put. Like me and Mike, we're from Europe. He's from Belgium, and I'm from Sweden. And there's actually a law in Europe saying that I cannot place my data outside the borders of Europe. You recognize it? Yeah. So you want to control where that is put. And you can do that with Azure. For now case, we can say that, okay, we want to put our data in the data center in Dublin, and we will geo-replicate it down to Amsterdam. And then this other thing. Here in the U.S., I love you guys, don't get me wrong, but you have a lot of interesting organization with three-letter words like CIA and FBI and what so on and so forth. Let's say you back up to the cloud and FBI comes and say, hey, I want Mike's data. Is that possible? Can they get that data? Yeah, they can. What happened if a technician in the Azure data center went rogue and like go inside and copy Mike's data onto a removable device like a USB or whatever and take it home? Can he do that? Yeah, that's possible, yeah. Or what if Ballmer, Mr. B, says, I want Mike's data on my desk before 4 p.m., period. Will he have it? Yeah, he will, because he's a boss. But the most important thing is the data put in Azure is always encrypted. Okay, that's the first thing. It's always encrypted. Secondly, the key that is doing the encryption is not in the cloud. You got it for your sake. And there is only one key. So if you lose that key, wow, you really use that? No. We're not working for Microsoft. So if you lose that key, you can't call Microsoft and say, hey, guys, I want a new key. You can get a new key, but you can't get that key. There's only one key. So keep that in mind. Don't lose it. So even if Ballmer, the big, great man, gets your data, he can't read it. Even if FBI, CIA, whatever three-letter organization in the world gets your data, they can't read it because they don't got the encryption key. That's safety, and that's good. One other thing, like here in the U.S., you got those super-duper great internet connections. Those guys here in front are smiling, Mike. Yeah. But like in Belgium, where Mike lives, he still uses like those modems to make that funny noise when he dials up. Yeah.
Stop laughing with Belgium,
we
please.
Do.
We have modern equipment, sort
of. You do?
Of. Sort of.
Sort of?
Yeah.
Wow. No, you have quit those, like, male pigeons? You'll be on that station?
No, we still have those.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
It's our backup plan.
The backup plan, yeah. In your business continuity plan. Nice work, Belgium. So, in Sweden, though, where I come from, we got ESDN. So, what you would like to do is, with that bandwidth your company has, you don't want to choke it, don't you? Or do you? No? No. So there's two different ways of doing this. First off, you can do compression on the Azure agent. You can compress that data, put up in the cloud. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you guys remember the network throttling thing I showed you before here? Yeah? Wow, good. You can do throttling, meaning that during business hours, like me and Mike's hours are like for 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., hard work. I must say, because my boss is up front here. Yeah, so then we need to say, well, during that business hour, don't use all my bandwidth. Use like 10% of it or something. When it's not business hours, well, take what you need. And that is keeping your company from not using all that bandwidth just for Azure, so you can keep control of it, okay? So, we talked about how to make backup to Azure. Let's do the restore. How did that slide get there? So, here we go. And here we go. So, restore from Azure. Remember previously, I said there was some restore catalog. Let's do a recovery from Azure. Here I got my catalog, MMS 2013, that is backed up to Azure. Let's restore it. So A good thing about DPM is that you don't need to be like a super advanced administrator to understand the GUI. So let's place this on our alternative location. Start recover. So.
It's really that easy?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now I understand why you do DPM for a living.
Yeah. I got so much time now for my family. It's awesome. So what this will do is it will go to Azure, okay? It will talk to via my Azure agent, you know, the long, long word I said before. Talk to Azure and say, hey, Rob, want to do a restore. Verify me using the certificates, and we're going. So what this will do is it will, as I said, kick up a restore. Remember that catalog I was talking about, okay? When you configure the Azure backup, you also configure a catalog that is used as a temporary space. So keep in mind, if you put like 1 or 10 gigabytes in the cloud, you need to have a decent space or enough space in that recovery catalog. So it's important that you have enough. The configuration also is good if you put that restore temporary catalog on a different disk subset or something. So, the job is done. We have restored from Azure. Wow. Wasn't that fast? Oh, my, oh, my. So, this is my file that I restored. And, yeah, it's true. Backup to Azure with DPM rocks. So, there you go. So, to summarize it up, the Azure online backup is a preview. So what I would like just to inform you is with System Center 2012 and SCOM 2012, how many of you guys are using SCOM? Good job. So with 2012 SCOM, you were able to have that centralized console for your DPM servers. Rings a bell? Some of you nodding? One thing that's important about that central console is when you do monitoring from the Service Pack 1 and also Service Pack 1 of that management pack is you will know that, well, okay, a backup has run. I have backup of something. But you don't get yet deep information about that online backup. Keep that in mind. Another thing. Right now, you can put only Azure backup from your primary DPM server. Keep that in mind. And one great feature, Mike, that was released with the Windows Server 2012, was a dedupe.
Yeah. But unfortunately, we cannot do that to cloud yet.
Yet.
Important to know, by the way, if we haven't said it before, this is in preview mode. So do not put your production environments yet into the cloud. Try it out. It's great, but we're not yet. Well, Microsoft is not yet in RTM mode, so.
Yeah.
And you get 3 months for free trying it out, so that's good.
So go for it. Also keep in mind some file types, and you're good. So then I will hand it over to my colleague and partner in crime from Belgium.
All right.
The one and only Mr. Mike Rezala.
So you're done. You can go to bed now or visit Vegas, do some gambling. And so.
Yeah, I'm off.
Okay, so the first layer was everything back up to cloud, and that's great, and then it's putting it outside. But the second layer I want to talk to you is about replicas. And one of the very cool features that comes with Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V3, and it's actually a real treasure, is replicas. And I know it's the first version of Replica, but and you know how Microsoft normally works. The first time they try something, the second time it gets better, and the third time they really are there. But with this feature, they really, you know, did a very good job, and it gives you, for free, because it's in the product, a great solution for your business continuity plan. Let's have a look. All right, first, let's talk about the relevance. The funny thing is that many companies, when I talk about Replica, because of course Microsoft isn't the first one with Replica, there are many other companies that can do it, is they say, I have clustering. I don't need replicas. And clustering is great when you have one site and one host goes down, great. Virtual machine moves to another host, we're up and running, everything's fine. Let's fix that one host and we're off. But what if the entire site goes down? Then we can use replicas. Because we're replicating the virtual machine to another data center, there we can start it up and continue to work. All right, let's go with a quick overview. Very important is that the replica feature of Microsoft is working with an inbox replication, which basically means that it is gathering on the primary server where your production virtual machine is running. It's gathering the changes. And it creates, you know, an inbox or a log file for about 5 minutes. And after that, every 5 minutes, more or less, but we'll talk about that one when I talk about the networking challenges for replica. What happens is the log file will be sent over to the replica server, which means it's asynchronous. It's not synchronous every 5 minutes, but it's asynchronous, right? It is a great solution for disaster recovery scenarios, for business continuity plans as well. And I'm going to try to show you in a demo that you can actually test those things. And that is important because normally when I go inside to companies and I ask the IT administrators, well, after their bosses are gone, how many times do you test your disaster recovery plan? 2 years ago. Never. How many times do you test your backup? When something goes wrong and we see if we can restore the file. So now you get an opportunity to test it every month, every 3 months, without much effort. And that is very important. It is application agnostic, which basically means whatever is running in the virtual machine, we don't care. We're replicating the virtual machine, but whatever is running can be Exchange, can be SQL, can be whatever you're thinking about. We don't care. It just replicates. Doesn't matter. If you start up your replica, it will be consistent. It will be running. Now, I have to admit, in our testing, when we started testing this, we found one or two applications from years 2000, 2003, that had some issues with this. So even though if you have older applications and it's application agnostic, test it with your really, really old applications. There could be something legacy that can break, right? And last but not least, and that is very important, it is storage agnostic. So in your primary site where all your productions are running, you can have a very expensive sandwich cost you a fortune, but on the replica side, you can actually have just one server with a lot of SATA disks on it, which are pretty cheap, and replicate to there. Of course, you know, if you're going to start your replicas on those SATA disks, probably they will be a little bit slower, but at least you have the information, and you can continue your work. Affordable, easy to manage, flexible. Let me try to show you that in a few things. So, already explained it, asynchronous location, what happens, primary virtual machine changes, goes into a log file, and then are sent to the replica host. Yeah? Very flexible in deployment. This is kind of what we see for SMB, or mid-market, smaller shops. What they're going to do is they got a head office, they got some very expensive equipment over there, and they are replicating to a small other office, a satellite office, maybe even with a company that they know, they're friends of, and they kind of change things. Very simple solution. But what we also see is that, certainly in Europe, many of our small businesses, they don't have a second office. Now, here's the good thing. If you are a hoster and you're sitting in this session, open up your ears, because what you can do is offer this. Business continuity as a service or disaster recovery as a service. Call it whatever you want. It's got a cool name. You can market it. You can sell it. But what can happen is that you have a customer that has, you know, one or two hosts, all on a very cheap storage location, and he will replicate his virtual machines to the hosting environment. And you had another customer that actually runs his virtual machines on an SMB tree, which now you can do with Hyper-V3, and he replicated to the host's data center. And whatever the hoster is having over there, I mean, a lot of hardware, an expensive SAN, or whatever he's running, it doesn't matter. It's storage agnostic. So you can actually do that as well. All right. Let's go and have a look at this replication. So where is my server? Here we go. I should close this one. And open up Hyper-V Manager. So what we got here, we got two Hyper-V hosts, Hyper-V1, Hyper-V2. We're going to be honest with you, they are not on different offices. They're actually here in the speaker room standing next to each other. The worst thing we can do is that now a speaker by accident pushes the wrong button and I lose everything, but that's about it. And what we have is, we've got on Hyper-V1, only thing I've did here is saying in my, my settings, here we go, Hyper-V settings, I went to the replication configuration and I said, you know what, enable this as a replica server, that's it. And then I took a decision what kind of authentication I wanted to use. Now in this case, because there are two hosts in the same domain, I can use simple Kerberos authentication over port 80, that's it. But if you're in the hoster scenario, or if you're even, you know, got policies or legislation or whatever, you can work with certificates as well. We actually saw companies that decided, you know what, we got our production environment, we're going to replicate this to other hosts which are in a work group somewhere else, but then you have to work with certificates. You can do, of course, self-signed certificates, but that means more work, or you can use those bought certificates from the internet from all of these companies. You can choose the port and so on. And then the second thing you have to decide is, who are you going to allow the replication to? In this case, I'm a lazy guy. I just said, you know what, allow replication for everybody. But you could say, you know what, this Hyper-V host, you can only replicate to that Hyper-V host and so on and so forth to put some more security in it. That's it. That's the only thing I did. On my other server, the Hyper-V2, I did exactly the same thing. Nothing more, nothing less. We've got enabled. Now it's running. One thing you do need to know is because we now have a two standalone host scenario, that's all I have to do. If you have a cluster where your production virtual machines are running, you have to install the replica broker as a role on your cluster. So why? Well, if you're live migrating one virtual machine to another host, the replica broker needs to know that it's been moved and break the replication from one side and continue it from the second host. But it will do that for you. So if you live migrate a virtual machine, you don't have to put the replication again. It just works. It will do it after. For you. So that is pretty easy and pretty cool stuff, not much maintenance to do. The second thing we need to do is, of course, enable our virtual machines that they start replication. So let's take our domain controller here. And what I'm going to do now is just say enable replication. And then we get typical Microsoft wizards. By the way, we can automate this, but I'll come back to that one at the end of the session. We're going to go next. We're going to specify our replica server. So in my case, that's Hyper-V, not one, but two. Here we go. And because it's in the same domain, it knows that the other server is configured with Kerberos and port 80. But if it would not be able to do that, then you need to manually select it here. All right. I'm going to compress the data that's transmitted over the network. That's, again, one of these features that you need, certainly if you're doing it over once. It takes, of course, a little bit more resources from your hosts. And we're going to talk about all the resources you need on the host later on. But here's the option where you choose that. Here you go. You can choose the replication VHDs. Now, in my case, our domain controller runs on one VHDX. Bad choice, I know, but it's a demo environment. Now, one of the things you can do, for example, and certainly if you're working with replicas, a good practice is that you have a specific VHDX for your page file. If you have got this huge SQL boxes running virtually with 32, 64 gigs, you've got a huge page file. Instead of replicating that page file, because you know what? That's what's changing a lot. You would be able to deselect the page file VHDX here. So that's a very good thing that you can do within your virtual machines. You can see that I'm not following my own best practices, but here we go. And then you can actually do configure recovery history. I already talked to you about, well, every 5 minutes, we're sending over the log files. But let's say there's corruption 15 minutes ago, and again, I'm a lazy administrator, so by the time I see it, I'm way too late, and my replica is worth nothing because it has been replicated as well. What you can do is you can actually say, give me a few additional recovery points. Give me 4 more additional recovery points. You know what? Do that every 4 hours. And it actually will try to tell you how much additional storage you will need on the replica side, but you can see it here. And you can do that. I'm not going to do this with this wizard, but I'll show you with another server which is already replicating for a few days how that actually works. And then you can select how your first initial replication is going to run. Because, again, we have to think about our network, we have to think about our resources. If you do this in the middle of the day, chances are you got overhead over your hosts, and people will see some slowness in your environment. Now, in this case, I can just say go, but it could be that you want to say no, do it this evening. Or, even better, send it through external media. Let's say your server is 80 gigs, and you want to send it over the WAN. It could cost you a lot of money. Put it on a USB device, ship it over to the other side, import it, and then let it resynchronize. So you don't have to send over 80 gigs or something like that. Or if you're using backup, let's say you're using DPM or any other vendor, you might be able to say, you know what, I've got a backup on that other side. I'll use that as the initial copy. So recover my backup, the latest one, use that as the initial, and then let it resynchronize. So that's another option you got. But I can say now, do it immediately. We get our typical summary, finish, and it starts actually sending all the data to my replica server. And if I now go look at Hyper-V2, then you will see that here he is actually receiving the different changes. Now, they built it so smart that you now can actually start live migrating the domain controller in your cluster. You can do whatever you want with it, and he just doesn't care. It just continues. So they build it very decently to avoid failures. All right. That was it for the setup. Nothing too difficult. Okay. So let's talk a bit about disaster recovery scenarios or business continuity scenarios, the way you want to see it. And what we want to do with replicas, we've got four options. First, from time to time, we want to test it. It has to be, you know, we really as IT pro need to test it. We don't want to test it the moment there is a disaster and then see a lot of problems and so on and so on. We need to test this. Yeah. A second scenario which we saw was that there are people using it for site maintenance. They actually started the replica so that everybody could continue to work, upgraded the host, did the patching, did whatever maintenance work they needed to do, and then reversed the replica. And I'm going to show you how you can do that on an easy way. And then, of course, what if you see in your production environment that there's one server that's going crazy, there's something wrong, you could use this as well. And then you have the latest one, which is sudden disaster, which, of course, I hope nobody has. But in that case, you can use replica as well. All right. Let's see. Let's start with planned failover. And planned failover means, okay, I've got on my schedule 7 o'clock in the evening, because according to Robert, I always work late, which is not really true, but here we go. 7 o'clock in the evening, I'm going to do a planned failover. And what I'm going to do at that moment is actually test it, do some site maintenance, or actually when something goes wrong, these are the scenarios. In this case, there's zero data loss. You will not lose a single file, a single bit, a single whatever you're doing with that server. However, you will have some downtime. When you do planned failover, there is some downtime. Cool thing about this is it's got efficient reverse replication. So what's happening is during the normal day, you've got an ongoing replication. Your virtual machines are replicated to site B. And then what you're going to do is you're going to shut down your primary virtual machine. The latest log is sent over to the second side, side B. It will start at that moment of virtual machine. You can test everything out. You can do the maintenance work on the other side. And then at the end, when you say, okay, everything is running, everything is good, we're going to do the reverse. And we're going to just say reverse replication to side A and bring everything back online. But that's a slide. Let me just show you how it works. That's much better. This is my server. All right. So what I have here is I've got this file server, which is not responding. Oh, my Hyper-V manager is not responding. Let me quickly close this one, if it wants to. Here we go. And
didn't we, like, tell Murphy to stay off our demo environment?
Yeah, I did, but
why didn't he listen?
Yeah, well, Murphy never listens.
No.
Yeah, I still got some issues here. Well, let me see if I take the other server where our friend is, actually. Yeah. Hyper. Hey. Oh. Sorry, I'm still inside the DPM serializer. Sorry, here we go. This one. All right. So what we've got here is our secondary file server, and I told you about all these different snapshots. From this file server, I actually have four different snapshots. Yeah? But what I want to do now is I want to do a planned failover. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to shut down my file server. There you go. Shut down. It's going to hopefully quickly go down. And then I'm actually going to do the failover. This is the only thing which you still have to do manually if you use the graphical user interface. If you use PowerShell, you can automate. If you use Orchestrator, and I'm pretty sure that you saw one or more sessions on Orchestrator this week, then you could automate all this stuff. But in this case, I need to shut down and then say, go to my replication, say, planned failover, failover. So what's happening is checking that the virtual machine is off. It's checking if it's possible to do the reverse replication. And now it's sending over those last logs, which it's doing now. It will fail over and start the machine, right? It's doing this, and this is actually the longest part. And what you should be able to see is that the file server starts in a couple of seconds on the other side. I'm not going to wait on that. I will show you the results a little bit later. Here we go. All right. In the interest of time, we'll continue a bit. Now, another scenario is a test failover. And with a test failover, you got no downtime. And that's the best thing. It's just, you know, we test the failover, see if it works. Well, what happens is that with that, you can actually test whatever recovery point you want. And that's pretty good, because that means you can test one of those four recovery points to see if it's working. And actually, it might be able to work as a backup as well. Let's say, by accident, somebody deletes a file, and you know it was there 2 hours ago. You could do this test failover. What it will do is take the original copy, make a copy of it. You can start it up, get the file out, bring it back down. But there are some dangers about it. One of the dangers is that you actually need to pre-configure an isolated network. Why? Because if you create a copy with this test failover, what will happen is if you boot up that virtual machine, well, the original one is still running. So you could have, you know, IP conflicts and things like that, and that could be a little bit nasty. So what we see in that scenario, you're going to make that copy and make sure it's got another IP, or preferred actually in another another VLAN or something, so that it can't touch the production environment. So what you do, you have the connectivity. This is our primary server. We got the replica. What you can do is actually inject static IP addresses, do an auto assignment to a DHCP to the replica environment, or preserve IP via network virtualization, which is another cool thing which now comes in Windows Server 2012. But it's not in replica, so this is also something you need to do yourself. And the last thing is you need to update your DNS records, because if what you're going to do is, you know, take, for example, in this case, I believe the name was a SQL VM, and then start up in some other VLAN that machine, if you then connect with your client, it still knows the old production IP address, so you kind of have to do those things manually. But what you could do at that moment, if you're thinking ahead, you could actually say, this is my production network, I've got my replica server, and within that, I'm going to build a test network. You could do it with VLANs, you could do it with virtualization network, whatever you want, and then do your testing every month. And afterwards, you just delete those virtual machines, those copies, and you're good to go, and you got all your things again, right? Few things you need to know about planning. Yeah, one of them is network capacity. We already talked about it when we talked about Azure. This one is even more critical. This is going to be very important. Again, we are working here on a LAN environment. Yeah, pretty easy. We've got the bandwidth. But if you're going to work through different offices or through hosters, you really need to have a look at this one. So this is always great. So what we get in our manuals, they tell us, estimate the rate of data change. Now, who can tell me what kind of data change every day happens on their virtual machine? Most of the guys that I talk to, they have no clue how many data is changed on a virtual machine for 24 hours. That's actually not that much, but still, you don't have a clue. So you kind of have to co-calculate. How do we do that most of the time? We do a test setup with replicas, which we do internally, and then we calculate every day how much. How you know that? I'll show you a little bit later, but you can see the replication health, and you can see what the averages are that are being sent. So that's the way to do it. You have to estimate peak usage. What is peak usage? Well, if you know that, every afternoon, there is one department in your company that puts like 10 gigabytes of new data into your SQL server. 5 minutes later, that is being replicated. So you have to think about those that you know that. And then, of course, your network bandwidth, you have to take care. And this is not for me. This is not my data. I don't have that environment to do this kind of calculations. But this is data that has been calculated by Microsoft themselves. And I said to you in the beginning, those 5 minutes where it's replicating. Now, here you can actually see, if you're sending over uncompressed data within 24 hours on a 512 kbps with an average of 20 ms latency and 1% of packet loss, which is, I think, not bad, but it happens at once, then you actually see that when we hit the 3.5, about 4 gigabyte limit, we're crossing the 5 minutes, which means your replicas will be more behind than 5 minutes. Will it break the replica? Will it do difficult? No. It will just continue, but know that from time to time, it could be more than those 5 minutes. And this is the reason. And then you see some more calculations where you need to take care of. If you have 1.5 Mbps, you'll be able to do it. Now, of course, some people will tell me 10 gigabytes. That's not enough. That's not much. We have much more changes during a day. You would be surprised that there are not really that much changes. We have seen large SQL clusters that not even make it 10 gigabyte change on a daily basis. So test it out before you put it into your one environment. Second thing is, of course, the throttling. Yeah? You can do this probably with a GUI, but what you can do in this case, you can do the throttling based on your destination subnet. We have to promote a bit PowerShell, so here are the PowerShell commands. You can use that. Or you can use it based on the destination port. Again, all PowerShell things you can do. One of the things you also have to know is when you have multiple virtual machines, which I am doing today, I've got this file server which is replicating, but I also got the Active Directory which is replicating now, or domain controller, that is doing that in parallel. Yeah? Now, doing that in parallel, if you have 10, 15 virtual machines, your bandwidth could also be having an issue. Now, what you get is, of course, the more you're doing at the same time, that leads to more latency, and you're going to get behind with the 5 minutes. The less you're doing at the same time, you're underutilizing your bandwidth. So you can do that by changing how many parallel sessions you want at the same time. How do you do that? Unfortunately, only one way. Go to the registry and change it over there. There you can say how many. By default, it's 3. And if you look at the numbers, then we see that if you have 1.5 Mbps, 3 is ideal. If you have 300 Mbps between your two sites, you can do 10. And then you can start calculating again how many you want to do in parallel. Now, the last important about planning this is your server impact, and it has server impact. If you've got a host that is really loaded all the time, and you're going to enable replication, you might get yourself into trouble. Yeah? So what we see is, first, we got more IOPS, 1.5 times the write IOPS. So imagine that you're writing, and I'm just going to say a very stupid number, 60,000 IOPS, and you enable replica times 1.5. So your infrastructure in the end has to be able to work with that, has to be able to not slow down your virtual machines. Yeah. The replica server, the impact is much higher. But on the other hand, do we really care? If we have a replica server, we're not using it into production, and we're assuming that it's just there to, in case of something goes wrong, to be used. And what we see there is that for our IOPS, we got 0.6 times the write IOPS to receive and convert everything, but 3 to 5 times writing everything and merging everything for those recovery points. So in your backend, even, yeah, I said in the beginning, you can just use SATA. Yes, you can, but it could be that you're experiencing delays because of all these IOPS that needs to be done. So take that in calculation as well. And if we're going to look at the memory, then every virtual disk, not virtual machine, but every VHD we're replicating, takes around 50 megabytes of your memory. Again, if you're leveraging your host and trying to take the maximum out of your memory, then this could be a problem. 50 megabytes is not much, but 50 megabytes times 20 VHD is a lot more, right? The CPU impact with today's CPUs is not that big. It will be below 3%, so we probably can live with that one. All right, now, how are we going to manage it? I already showed you a few things to the GUI. I'm going to show you a few more as well. But PowerShell is the key word here again. And the comments you see here are the two comments you have to remember. I mean, I like PowerShell, I like a lot, but I forget everything. Windows Server now has about 2,300 commentlets. The guy that actually knows them all of them, give me a call. I've got a job for you because I really need a developer like that. But it's impossible. I can't even remember those things that I work on a daily basis. Maybe that's more me, but never mind. But the important ones you have to do is get comment, module Hyper-V, and then where the name like replication or REPL, because that works as well, and I'll show you that. And same thing for failover, and then you have all the different commentlets that you can use. But this is, again, a slide. Let's just go to this one. Here we go. Oh, by the way, before I actually go to that, at this moment what we see is that on Hyper-V, my file server is off, but I replicated to the other side, and now it's running here. And you can see, if I click on it, it will open, and it's accessible. We can work with it, yeah? Now, if I want to change that again, the only thing I have to do is save this one, shut down again. Here we go. And say, replication, do a planned failover, and now it's actually going to fail over to the other side again, which now goes much more quicker. Here we go. And now it's running here again, right? Now, one of the things I also wanted to show you is here at Hyper-V 2, right-click on it, replication. I'm going to do a test failover. I'm going to take one of my recovery points, say test failover, and what you will see is that we got a new virtual machine now called file test, which is a good copy, which is a stable copy, and that you could test. But again, if I test it now, I've got two times the same server. How you can test it, if you're, again, lazy like myself, I just remove the network settings and I boot up and see if it works. But there are other ways with the virtualization and so on. All right. Let's have a look at our health. Right-click on that machine, go to replication, and then say view replication health. And you get some information here. First, you're going to see replication enabled, from where to where, what is my health, normal, warning, or you're in bad shape. And then what are the time that started, what's the average size, and so on. Yeah. Few of the things you have to know. Oh, the reason why it's all now zero is because I just did the reverse. That was maybe not such a good idea. I should have done the other way. But normally you see here how many replication cycles you have done. Now the good thing is you can miss replication cycles. Because you're working with a wide area network or you're replicating to a hoster, you could have connection loss. It can miss it. It will fix that. After 1 hour, it will go into warning. You know what? I'm 1 hour behind. Could you check out what's wrong? And if it goes longer, then it will go into error. But it will do those things for yourself and fix it themselves, right? Second thing, of course, is PowerShell. Now, I'm a lazy guy. Here we go. Let me quickly do this. This will just simply show me all the different comments. And if I go to fail, then we're going to see all the other comments where we can try the failovers. Now, this is what you need to use when you want to do it with Orchestrator or automate this thing. So new virtual machine, automatic, you can say enable VM replication and so on. One of the very important ones that you need to know is measure VM replication. And this one will actually show you the health, the latency. And if you're good at PowerShell, something which I'm not, you could actually export this to HTML and have somewhere a view in your data center saying, you know what, this is running, and so on and so on. So what we got is we got our two servers replicating. Health is normal. The latency, so on my DC, my latency is 3 minutes and 34 seconds, which is not bad. What's my average replication size? In this case, 21 megabyte, and how many successful I have. 3 out of 3 today, but again, this can go wrong. So this is how you can automate all these things, right? All right. Let me see. This one's gone. Right. So quick recap on this is that replication can be an effective defense layer for your business continuity, for your disaster recovery, whatever you want. It's cheap. You actually can do it somewhere on a workstation that you deployed Hyper-V on it. Now, of course, if you then start everything up, probably is a bit slow, but it could be this way that you could do a backup. And those replicas, although they're off, you can actually do a copy. So you have your VHDs, you got your config information, you get all that stuff that you need in case something goes wrong. And with that, besides the evaluation, please fill in your evaluations. We have to ask that. Are there any questions? And if there are, please come to the microphones so they are recorded. And in the meantime, let me thank you, and Robert as well. Let us thank you very much for being here and listening to us. And enjoy the rest of the show.